It certainly is, and the time is 10 minutes past 11. This month of October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and it's a month where a lot of information will be given to you about what you need to look out for and everything associated with it. The Hospital Research Foundation have a segment each month, and I'm always delighted to welcome a guest which who they arranged to come in. And this is a very special guest that I have today, and I'm talking about Dr. Pallav Dasari. Now, Pallav came in with me, seems like 100 years ago now, but she's back. She's postdoc. Research fellow at the University of Adelaide Medical School, and just does so many different things, and such a wonderful worker in research, and particularly dealing with breast cancer, and we'll certainly find out more about that as time goes on. Hi, Mark, welcome back.
Hello, David. It's so lovely to see you after such a long time.
I know, it's been too long, but it's wonderful to see you. Congratulations on everything you're achieving and the work you do. I think it's outstanding, and we're very blessed to have you here in the work you do.
Yeah, no, thank you. I wouldn't be here without the support of the community and people like yourself who really help us.
Can I just say right from the start, before we get into what you're doing, the Hospital Research Foundation over the years has a great support of yours.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, and they offered grants and all this sort of thing, which must have been terrific help in the early days and what you were doing.
Yep, no, most definitely. We wouldn't be here without the Hospital Research Foundation. They are so supportive of local medical research that's being done here in South Adelaide and South Australia. And without them, there's a lot of research that wouldn't get off the ground. And I'm sure you've interviewed many people can attest to that.
Yeah. I think one of the nice things is that that we get the younger researchers come in, and they're very proud to talk about the Hospital Research Foundation and the support they've given. So it's great, really, that they do that.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, I used to be one of those younger researchers.
I know you did too, but now you invite them to come in and study yourself, don't you?
Well, I think it's very good for the PhD students to have that exposure and be able to tell the world what they do.
Yeah, it is interesting when they come in because a great majority of them are very nervous, having not done radio again. And I love talking to them about, you know, what to expect. And once you get them talking about themselves and then lead into what they're actually doing, they really enjoy the segment. So thank you for that. It's great to have them on board. Let's talk about what you're doing associated with breast cancer.
Yes. So we're still continuing the work that I've spoken about before. And we've actually heard this, some of our students come in and talk about. So I believe you've interviewed Sarah Bernhardt as well as Amitha Gardiger.
Yep.
So we're continuing our research on breast cancer as well as the healthy normal breast because we're really so we study the whole spectrum because we really want to understand how does cancer even emerge in the breast and once it emerges, what is it doing in ways, and we try to understand both those aspects to one, see if we can prevent breast cancer from happening in the first place, and two, if it does happen, what can we do to stop it and eliminate it. And actually, that's where the work of you have Amitha, who talked about her work with understanding breast density in young women, which is a major risk factor for breast cancer. So that's the early phase. And then you had Sarah talking about, well, we've got breast cancer. Now, how is it actually working in the breast and what can we do about it? So that's the type of work that we do. My particular interest is understanding the immune system in the breast and how it can either prevent breast cancer or contribute to breast cancer.
It's a very interesting area, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, we talk about breast cancer, you know, my own situation with Jill and cervical cancer and how it came from nowhere. And we were immensely shocked when we found out. And the same would apply with people that are diagnosed with breast cancer. But there are signs, aren't there? Could be lumps or whatever, or, you know, family background or whatever.
I mean, the one advantage, and I use that word loosely, with breast cancer compared to other cancers is, at least with breast cancer, you can feel it.
Yeah.
Like, it is there. In that sense, it's a cancer that we can actually screen for and look for and you can feel for. If you've got a cancer, as you know from your own situation, where it's ovarian cancer or pancreatic cancer or any of those internal cancers, it's very hard to get to. And therefore, because it's harder to get to, it tends to be diagnosed later.
Yeah.
So in that sense, at least with breast cancer, it can be picked up a bit earlier, which has subsequent benefits for increased survival.
Can I ask a simple question?
Please.
For me, I don't quite understand it, but my understanding is, and we'll hone in on breast cancer, that cancer cells can sit dormant for a very long time.
Absolutely.
In your body. I didn't quite understand that, and still don't understand how that can't be shown, like how it can't come up.
Okay, so, and this is where the immune system also comes in. So, there was a study that was released in the late 80s, I think, by a Danish pathologist. And this guy, he worked really hard. What he did was he went and got, because he was a pathologist, he was getting all the people who were dying. He did this massive study over several years. People who died young due to violence or accidents, so not due to disease, but in their 20s to 40s, either due to murders or car accidents or whatever, he looked at their breasts and their prostate. So he basically went through and what we call blocked it. He went basically through the whole organ looking at the cellular structures. And he found roughly 20 to 30% of these young people had an early lesion in their either breasts or prostate. Now, here's the key thing. Not all of them, had they lived to age 80, would have then gone on to develop cancer. A proportion would have, but not all. So here's the question. What are the differences between those people where the lesions just stay dormant and, frankly, they'll get hit by a bus before, you know,
that lesion even does anything.
Yeah. Like, you know, they'll live to 100 and the lesion will just sit there and not do a thing, versus those people where that lesion progresses into a cancer. And this is actually a question that a lot of medical researchers are looking at. And some reasoning is the immune system can have a lot to do with it. The immune system actually knocks off one cancer cell a day in people on average. And so if the immune system is not working well, then that's where a single cancer cell then forms a small cluster and then a small lump. And then
it develops.
Yeah. And then once it forms a small lump, it's kind of hard for the immune system to then attack it because it's become too big.
Can I ask a simple question again?
Yep.
When you're talking about immune system, is that, what is that exactly?
Oh, the immune system is really wonderful. It's so wonderful.
I'm glad I asked that question.
Well, no, I dedicated my career to it because I went and got a PhD in immunology.
And that's why I hear people talk about it and I think, what really is it?
Well, okay, so I'm an immunologist first and foremost. So I've always studied the immune system for the last 20 years. Now, the immune system is really important because it helps you fight off bugs, you know. So if you get an infection, it fights it off and you're healthy from that. So it's a really important – well, I mean, we wouldn't live without the immune system, basically. Because we need that. Not that our immune system always works. I mean, if it did – then none of us would ever get sick. But I'm battling a cold at the moment. I think a lot of people are feeling miserable right now. And our immune system's working to get us better. But right now, the bug is winning. But we'll get past it. But it was this job, this research in cancer, which actually made me fall in love with the immune system even more.
Okay.
So the immune system is so wonderful that not only can it detect foreign agents like bacteria or viruses and knock them off, a cancer cell is actually the worst kind of cell. It's actually one of our own cells that's gone rogue. That's really what it's about. It's one of our own cells that's flipped a switch and decided to grow uncontrollably. The immune system can actually detect an early cancer cell and kill it. And this is what I find so wonderful about it. The immune system is so clever, like throw a bit of, you know, like anyone can look at a foreigner and attack it. But to see one of your own go rogue and be able to detect it and say there's something funny about this cell, we better kill it, that amazes me. And that's why I think it's so wonderful.
So if you talk on percentages, would that happen very regularly? Or?
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is why you need to be healthy and strong and have an active immune, you know. But you don't want to have it overactive because the immune system also has a dark side. People with autoimmune diseases such as lupus or what is it, various other autoimmune diseases, they suffer from an overactive immune system. But when the immune system is perfectly balanced, it's active enough to eliminate infections, early cancer cells, keep our system functioning healthy, you know, in a healthy manner, but not so much that it then decides to attack itself for no reason, which is why you see people with the joint pains and the heart problems, etc.
It's an interesting situation. It's so complex.
It's very complex. But I only know one small aspect of the immune system.
But, I mean, thank heavens you do, and the work you're doing associated with it. So can the immune system really fight hard against breast cancer or signs of it?
Well, this is where we say when it's the early lesion not going anywhere, we think the immune system's involved with that. But once a small cluster of cancer emerges, cancer actually scares the bejesus out of me, not just from the human point of view where you see people suffering, but when you read about the molecular and cellular behavior of cancer, why I get so frightened is these cancer cells can actually hijack the body's systems to feed itself. So it'll do things like it'll send out signals to turn the immune system to work for it. Then it will send out other signals to get blood vessels to grow and feed the tumor more blood and therefore more nutrients. It then puts out other signals to basically mask itself from the body's immune system as well, so they don't even know that there's this tumor growing. So cancer is actually terrifying from that point of view.
Well, it is. I mean, I've seen it with the change in over a certain number of years of Jill being healthy as can be to being not able to do a thing. So, I mean, I've talked about that a lot before, but the reality is it's something that once gets hold.
Yeah, and that's where the challenge is. And that's part of the reason we also look at healthy tissue, because let's see if we can catch it early. Let's try and deal with it when it's a spark and not a raging forest
fire.
Because once it's a raging forest fire, you're just dealing with too many other factors. And so that's why trying to understand why is it some lesions stay as a lesion and some lesions become cancer. If we can actually work out that particular factor, maybe we can do something about
it. Well, let's hope so. And I know you, as long as you can, you'll keep working at it for sure. I mentioned that October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Could I ask you, how far in your experience has research improved since you started? I mean, how many years you've been associated with it now?
Well, I've been in medical research for about 20 years. I've been in breast cancer research for about 10.
How much, say, from the when you first started to where you are now, have you seen things happen which are helping the fight against it, or is it a very difficult area?
It's incremental. That's the way research works. But it's just watching how our knowledge deepens more and more, which then gives us more opportunities to tackle things. And also getting new lab techniques, cutting-edge lab techniques, which help deepen our understanding. There's been a lot of changes. Like I finished my PhD about 8 years or so ago, nine years ago, and there's been new stuff coming up in terms of techniques, etc., where I have to ask my PhD students to train me, because it's like the field just changes very quickly. And so you do have to work hard to stay on top of it. But I think with cancer, one of the things I appreciate about the most is our understanding of cancer has vastly changed over the decades. Whereas before, we used to be like, oh, it's a disease of organs, it's a disease of cells. We now realize it's a disease of genes. It's and with that, we now work out, well, what are the genetic drivers for this tumor? What are the genetic drivers for that tumor? And then, whereas previous methods of treatment was general, it was things like, let's cut out the cancer with, you know, surgery. Let's use a general chemical treatment, that is chemotherapy, to kill these cells in general. Now we're like, okay, this tumor expresses this protein. we can now develop a drug against that protein and knock it off. Mm. And that's where the immunotherapies are now coming.
Is that where that would be have to be looked at in the early days, though, wouldn't it? Early signs of cancer?
Well, basically at any stage. I mean, we'd prefer to get it early, obviously.
Of course, yeah.
But now what, like I go to breast cancer clinical meetings, and now what they're doing is women will often get targeted chemotherapy prior to surgery in order to shrink the tumour.
Yeah, yeah,
and then
yeah.
they go to for surgery, you know, so less tissue's taken. So they get chemotherapy to shrink the tumour, then they go on for surgery. The surgeon then cuts out the area that's been the tumour, goes to pathology, and then the results come back and they're like, so there's no tumour in that area that was cut out. You know, so the chemotherapy, the medical treatments are becoming so much better that the tumours are disappearing. Of course, as medics, you can't take the risk. You still need to remove that section and make sure it's completely... And we only know it's completely gone because it's gone to pathology. You wouldn't know otherwise.
No. You were given, received a post-doctoral fellowship back in 2013.
Yes.
A long time ago.
Yes.
From the Australian Breast Cancer Research, which is part of the Hospital Research Foundation Group. This obviously, and we did mention it right from the beginning, really set you on the right path.
It did.
In relation to things, which is fantastic. And to see a person like you is deeply passionate and dedicated to your role, to get a good start like that must mean a lot to you as well.
It does. So that fellowship basically allowed me to stay in medical research during that time and continue my continue my research, and also importantly train other students and expand, help my boss Wendy Ingman, Associate Professor Wendy Ingman, expand the research program, and also I help run the tissue bank. And that's where the work that the Hospital Research Foundation does is so important. Because just recently, I'm sure they might have mentioned it to you, they released about $5.7 million worth of fellowships for early career researchers and mid-career researchers.
Yes.
And okay, I'm going to do some dirty talk now, but you know, there is currently Australia is in a medical research funding crisis, and by crisis, you know, red alert, high level crisis.
I'm aware of that.
Those fellowships funded several people who I know they would have been forced out of medical research had it not been for that Hospital Research Foundation support. And this is where the Hospital Research Foundation is so valuable, because they're, I mean, they're not able to solve the crisis at all. This is a governmental problem.
Yes, it is.
And a sector problem.
Yep.
But they're at least giving some ability to some groups and some researchers to be able to do the work. And especially in South Australia, where unfortunately we don't get much of the federal medical research funding.
No, I've heard that.
So
might be good sometime down the track to really hone in on that. Because I know it is an important issue that we're about, and I want to keep that as a separate issue, because I'm getting my head around this whole aspect as well, and there's questions I'd like to ask you, which I find strange in my own mind, but we'll talk about that another time.
Yes.
This is interesting, and this is information I received. In 2007, you were named as one of the 30 superstars of STEM.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Okay, so this was a wonderful initiative that was done by Science and Technology Australia.
Yeah.
They're a body that represents the scientists and technologists of Australia, so different groups, such as, I mean, the Society of Reproductive Biology. They're not going to be happy with me. But, you know, there's a bunch of scientific societies of different areas. They represent maths, physics, geology, etc. And they speak for scientists in Canberra. And their management team, they've got this structure where they really want to help bring in new voices of science, because for many years science was dominated by older white men, and they wanted to specifically address that, because like in medical research 50% of scientists are women. And I certainly know that I always loved science, but I never really saw that in the media, and they're like, well, let's change this. So they launched the Superstars of STEM initiative, looking for female scientists who are really passionate and want to spread the message. And I was fortunate, and you know, hundreds of people applied, and I was fortunate to be selected.
So you should be.
And what they did was they looked at training me and how to get my message out about women and science, and also to get other images of scientists out there. And so if people are curious, you know, if they, and there's now a whole new cohort of superstars were selected, another 60. And if you want to see women in science who are and all disciplines of science who are passionate and just, you know, love science, like I always loved science since I was 13 years old.
Yeah, I know.
And to be in that space is really wonderful. I go and talk to my boss regularly. She's another woman of science. And we have all these conversations about, you know, either breast cancer or immunology or, you know, different scientific questions, which people don't often see.
No.
And that's really what the Superstars program was about.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
My turn. Might throw you a challenge. You might get your boss and yourself back in and have a session here one day. I think it'd be very interesting.
Oh, that well, that would certainly be worthwhile, you know, having a particular discussion.
Yeah, we'll work on that. And,
yes.
You can help me set that up. That'd be fantastic. Padov, thank you.
Yes.
It's been an absolute delight to have you in. It's been far too long. Congratulations on the brilliant work you're doing, and I'm proud to call you part of my family here at Coast FM, even though you haven't been in for a long time. You know, here at Coast FM, particularly Thursday Coast Magazine, will support the wonderful work you and your team and the graduates are all doing. Keep it going, and any time you want to have a chat, I'm here.
Yeah. Look, thank you so much, Dave. Thank you so much for the invitation as well, and it's lovely to see you again.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Okay.
The time is 11:29 here at Coast FM.
For around a